Konnichiwa. Welcome to Outside Perspective. I'm your host, Adam Meredith. So happy to have you guys here. If this is your first time joining us, you're the shit. I love you guys. I'm so happy that you've found your way here. We're going to have an excellent conversation and gain some perspective. If you are a repeat listener, you know what the deal is, and I love you guys as well. But here we go. Every week, twice a week, you know, we're sitting down with interesting humans. We're just presenting a different perspective on the world. I'm trying to learn some shit. Hopefully, I can help you guys do the same. And we're having a good time along the way. This episode is brought to you by my good friends over at Jombo Superfoods. Go over to JomboCBD.com. You can check out their full line of products. Cannabidol is helping so many people, including myself. It can aid in sleep, and it can aid in brain health and digestion and gut health, and it's an anti-inflammatory. So many different benefits. A lot of people are seeing relief in so many different ways. One of my absolute favorite products from Jombo is their Muscle Balm. It's helped with my recovery immensely. I put it on my sore joints and my sore muscles after training. You know, I fucking actually broke my pinky toe a little over a week ago doing jiu-jitsu. And now while it won't help me grow, it won't help me fix the bone, it does aid with the pain and the inflammation in that area. So it's just been vital, I guess is the best word, for my training and my recovery. And you know, I think you guys are going to get a lot of benefit. So go check them out. Go to Jombo CBD. Use the code OUTSIDE when you check out. You'll save 20% off of your entire order. And guys, they usually have buy two, get one free. So throw two in your cart. I bet they put a third one in there. And you're going to get 20% off of that whole deal. That's an amazing deal. So go check them out, JomboCBD.com. We're also brought to you by Imposed Will. Go to imposedwill.com. Check us out. We got a full line of apparel products. Listen, you guys have the ability to impose your will on life. We all have the ability to. It takes a certain mindset and it takes work. Nothing happens without either one of those things. No growth happens in a comfort zone. Get that shit out of here. But through healthy habits and difficult challenges, we can strengthen our mind, we can build the life that we want to build, and we can impose our fucking wills. So go to imposedwill.com, join the community, get on the mailing list, get some apparel. It's all there, imposedwill.com. My guest today is Andrew Talheimer. And I probably messed it up. I'm sorry, Andrew. But he is the president and creative director for St. Louis Osuwa Taiko, which is a traditional, we actually talk about that, put quotes around that, but a Japanese band or a Japanese drum group that, you know, performs at different festivals and ceremonies, and it's pretty neat to see. I checked out some of the videos, and they just did the opening ceremony at the Missouri Botanical Garden Japanese Festival this past weekend, and we talked some time after that, and it was a pretty good conversation. I learned a lot about what was going on, or what exactly, you know, all the ins and outs of taiko. And, you know, what, you know, how do you make the drum, and, you know, where did it start, and just all this information is super fascinating stuff. I'm a huge fan of the Japanese culture, and as well as the Chinese culture and the Asian culture. I just really enjoy, like, you know, martial arts and discipline, and there's a lot of history over there. Fun fact, I think this is Japan, right? I could be fucking up right now. Oh, well, one of my absolute favorite things to study, and I should know this better, but are samurai, which I'm confident samurai are Japanese. I want to say yes. I should just go with my first brain and not second guess myself and say, yes, they are Japanese. I know 100%, but man, sometimes you're just rusty and you're not so sure. But either way, so it's just really cool to sit down with Andrew. He's just a bit more knowledgeable on the whole Japanese culture, so that was really cool to get that insight. You know, we had a fun conversation. So without any further ado, here's Andrew Thalheimer, ladies and gentlemen. You'll need a weekend for this, after this whole thing going on. This, what, 3 days, right?
It's 3 days, but...
But then you said it's a 13-day stretch, right?
It's a 13-day stretch, because right after this, well, it's 13 out of 14 days.
Okay.
So Wednesday we'll have a break. But until then...
Is that just for
right travel? After this, there's the Springfield Japanese Fall Festival in Springfield, Missouri. So Tuesday and Thursday we have practice for that. And then Friday we go and play Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Okay.
There. It's a little bit more relaxed. It's a smaller festival.
Right.
And they only ask for 45-minute shows.
Okay.
But we do have to sort of reconfigure what we're doing here because different people are going. Usually at the Botanical Garden Japanese Festival, we get everybody in the group. But not everybody can go to Springfield, Missouri the next weekend.
Okay. So your group, tell me the Taiko...
St. Louis Suadaiko.
Okay. So, St. Louis, say that one more time.
Osuadaiko.
Osuadaiko. Mm. I'm always self-conscious whenever like I say words that I know like have a very particular like pronunciation, cuz I don't want to sound like that guy who just
we've got some great ones in the past. We've been like Sawataiko, Sawataco. That's
yeah.
fun.
You say it so Sawataiko. Smooth, dude. It just like rolls off your tongue like butter, bro.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've been the taco group.
Yeah.
A lot of times we get just Osuadaiko, which is not correct. So we're St. Louis Osuadaiko. Osuadaiko is their parent group in Japan. They're the one who started us back in 1986.
Okay, and then you're just you're a branch of that.
We aren't really a branch. We kind of tried to be a branch. It's a long story, but it's they started us back in 86, and then they kind of let us go on our own because they're in Japan.
Yeah.
So what are they going to do? Right?
What are you going to do?
Right.
So how many people are in the group?
Right now we only have 13.
Okay. Okay. And so you're going to probably take, you said like four or five down to Springfield?
I think eight are going.
Eight or so that's a good, I mean, that's a good amount of the people, dude. I mean, what's a traditional size of a group like this? Or is there?
Interesting to use the word tradition. Traditionally, groups like this don't exist. So the groups you're seeing at Taiko performances like the Botanical Gardens and St. Louis Suadaiko and anything you're going to see on a stage, the first instance of that performance style ever was in 1951.
Oh, really?
A guy named Oguchi Daihachi Sensei. He was a jazz drummer by trade. And so somebody found some old sort of Shinto scroll and they thought it looked like drum music, but nobody could read it. So since he was a drummer, even though he's a jazz drummer, they're like, hey, can you read this?
That's interesting.
And he could read it. And he figured it out and he played it and he thought it was boring. So what he did is he arranged this sort of traditional music in a jazz ensemble drum style with traditional Japanese drums, but like a jazz ensemble style.
Okay. What made it boring?
I don't know the original piece, so I don't know.
No worries.
It was probably, if it was a Shinto scroll, it was probably the same thing over and over again, right? Because it's religious, ritualistic.
It's very repetitive.
Music. That's my guess. I don't actually know anything. But he actually, from 1951, he founded Osuadaiko. So Osuadaiko, being the same group that came to St. Louis and started us, it was directly the first taiko group to us.
So direct lineage.
Yep.
Yeah. So
this is kind of cool.
I do a lot of martial arts and like jiu-jitsu, and I know lineage is important, especially in martial arts and just the whole, Japanese culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very important.
Yes, absolutely. Osuadaiko themselves are very aware of their firstness.
Yeah.
that being said, there's a Book out called Taiko Boom, and if anybody is interested in learning more about Taiko, Taiko Boom I'm not going to say it's a great read. It's actually written kind of boring, but the information in it is fascinating.
Okay.
He talks about three distinct lineages of Taiko. So even though Osuadaiko was the first, Owedo Skoroku Daiko came next, based in Tokyo, and they were completely separate. There was no link between them.
Oh, okay.
And after that, Ondekoza came, when they were the first hardcore performance Taiko group. And if you're into martial arts, you would love these guys. They basically lived a monk-like ascetic life. They formed a commune where they did nothing but drum
every day.
Every day, and they run like 10 miles every morning. Sorry, 10 kilometers every morning because it's Japan.
Yeah.
They do nothing but study. They originally were trying to study like folk traditions, but then they went on to sort of adapt those for stage. And yeah. They split off. Some of the people wanted to be more modern, avant-garde, and some of them wanted to stay with the tradition. And the people who stayed with the tradition stayed with Ondekoza. Uh-huh. And the people who wanted to be more experimental became Kodo, which is the biggest Japanese drum name you'll ever hear. Some people think taiko is called Kodo.
Really? Because, so they branched off from the original and then went on to almost be bigger?
They are bigger. Best known in the world, easily. Oh. Yeah. They play, symphony halls. They've played in any place. Carnegie Hall, they've played.
Yeah. So you said, they branched off more from, I guess, this traditional interpretation of the music. And so what did they add to it?
They do things like they've commissioned composers to write pieces for them.
Okay.
They're not.
Is it just more flair, or
I wouldn't say more flair, but I guess more willing to branch out from a tradition. So
yeah.
The original purpose of Ondekoza, and this is all in the book, by the way, and it's been a while since I read it. So if I'm wrong, I encourage anyone to go and just read the book and say, "Hey, that guy was wrong." But they originally started to sort of bring all these traditions from Japan and sort of learn and study all these different Japanese traditions. So in that regard, even though they did adapt things to make them more stage worthy, they weren't really willing to go and do like crazy stuff with a symphony, for example.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay. Man, I bet that humans are so weird in the sense like we resist change.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of my pet peeves.
Yeah. Resisting change.
Yeah. Yeah. Change happens. You can embrace it or you can resist it. But you only resist it for so long.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only constant, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything's always changing. Honestly, if you're not trying to change, I'm always really wary of people who are always like, "Oh man, like you changed, bro." Like, if you have that type of person in your life, like you totally got to get away from them because like you're always changing and growing.
Yep.
Like you should be.
Yeah, I agree completely,
dude. And I know the Japanese culture, again, that word tradition, like they're steeped like deep into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So change probably comes even harder.
Yeah,
in that part of the world. So how did you get into this whole world of taiko and drumming and Japanese culture, dude? I mean, where are you from? Let me ask you that.
Well, like most taiko players, I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas.
Okay. Yeah, dude, I bet you got a whole bunch of them teaming there.
Yeah, no, there's none. Although I met someone last month from Little Rock who said she was going to start a group there. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Are you going to help with that at all?
I offered her help. She seemed to have it under control, though.
Okay.
So if she's listening, hey, Andrew, remember me? Give me a call.
Cool. So Little Rock, Arkansas?
Yep.
What were you in like band growing up?
No, I did nothing growing up. I did absolutely nothing. I was so boring.
It's
ridiculous. Yeah. I failed to play the piano between the ages of 7 and 8, and then that was pretty much it. I did do taekwondo.
Okay.
Right. So I had kind of a martial arts background, not like MMA, right? But
yeah.
You could kick really high.
Yeah, it's good for dexterity in the legs and stuff. I mean,
right.
I think even any martial art, especially at a young age, there's definitely benefits there, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's so many like principles that are taught.
Right. I'm glad I did it. And it turned out to be useful for taiko also. A lot of the principles for getting a good hit, right, for getting power in your hit.
Yeah.
Probably more so in taekwondo than like a judo or an MMA where you're actually fighting an opponent, right? In taekwondo, you stay there and you stay in a stance and you do a bunch of punches, right?
Yeah.
So you're really working on getting power from your legs all the way through your torso, through your arms.
Right.
Right. And it directly applies to taiko, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, because you're firmly planted into the ground, right? And you got to generate this force through your body and just like transfer that through the drum.
You have to use your whole body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you didn't do anything. You're from Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yeah, so I came to Washington University for college.
Came for Wash U.
Yeah, in St. Louis.
You must be smart as shit, dude.
That's exactly the words on my diploma. Smart as shit.
Yes.
Right? With a little picture of the shit emoji, little lines coming out of it. No, so I came here for school, and I don't know why. I came to the Japanese festival. It's a huge Japanese festival. It's like at the opening ceremony, I think it was Tanaka-san was saying, this is the, he wasn't sure if this is the biggest festival in the North America or one of the biggest. I've heard that debated.
But wow, I didn't know.
Yeah, last year we had, I think, 37,000 people. Whoa. Over 3 days.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's absolutely one of the biggest. I've heard off and on people say it's the biggest. It's not the biggest, but yeah, it's
a huge
event.
I knew this was like a big festival. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know to like how grand of a scale on like an international stage, because like we have quite a few things going on here in St. Louis, which mm-hmm. we're kind of spoiled for that in that regard. Like we have a lot of free stuff and a lot of cool stuff to come to. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize how large this was.
Yeah, it's enormous. It's huge. But I came in, I guess it was 97.
Okay.
And there was a taiko group playing, Hawaii Matsuri Taiko. They brought in taiko groups at that time to play the local St. Louis group, St. Louis Osodaiko. I can get into that later. But the Hawaii Matsuri they brought in, and they were just having such a great time.
Yeah.
They were amazing. I remember there was this one woman who was like 300 pounds if she was an ounce, and she was just up there just beating stuff and smiling and just being completely awesome. And I'm like, wow, that's cool. And I thought it was awesome, and then I left. I didn't think any more of it until I was talking to one of my friends in college, and I said, you know, there's some free food, do you want to go grab some? And he said, I got to go to taiko practice. I said, you can do that? I'm gonna go with you.
Yeah.
Right? And that was it. And I signed up immediately. I did one practice, and then that was in the springtime. So one practice, and they were at the university. So after the practice, everyone left for the summer.
Oh, yeah. Cut right there.
And I remember, like, Elon, like, every month, like, you're going to tell me when there's another practice, right? You're going to tell me, right? So, that first practice I remember, too. I just got up, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I was hitting stuff, like, as hard as I can. For 2 hours, right? The next day, I couldn't even, like, lift a glass of water. Like, my hand was shaking.
I bet.
Because my arms were so exhausted. I never used them for anything, right? Even in Taekwondo, I was mostly kicking stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Well, all those vibrations, dude, just, like, mm-hmm. coming through your hand. Like, my girlfriend and I recently bought a house, and we're doing the remodeling thing, and just banging with hammers or mm-hmm. cutting the grass even. Like, I haven't done that in a long time. Like, the vibrations will just shoot through my forearms. And I'm like, why are my forearms feel like I did something?
Oh, yeah.
I can only imagine what you felt like the next day.
Yeah. Well, I don't cut the grass, so don't ask. I hate it. This is one of the things I hate doing. Not going to cut the
yard
grass.
Work. Yeah, dude.
Yard work. No, yards were invented by the devil, I'm pretty sure.
Dude, I didn't even want to, like, buy. I'm like, I didn't think I ever wanted to buy a house mm-hmm. because of yard work and all that stuff. Like, I'm cool with being mobile and having somebody else take care of all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. absolutely. Totally agree.
Yeah. So do you live here in the city?
I live in, not in Creve Coeur, but near Creve Coeur.
Okay, yeah, dude, you're not too far from me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's it like when you're getting started into taiko drumming? Like, I mean, what's the protocol? Like, do you go buy your own drum? Like,
So you're going to see some of our drums tonight. Some of them were the original drums.
Big, right?
Some of them, not as big. They're never as big as you like, no matter how big your drums are. You want bigger ones, right? But some of the drums you'll see tonight were the original drums donated by Oguchi-sensei to the city of St. Louis.
Okay.
So he actually lives in Okaya, but Okaya and the city of Suwa are kind of connected, kind of like St. Louis and Chesterfield, but not really.
Yeah.
There's not like a primary and a secondary.
I got what you're saying, though.
But when he came in 86, he donated like a whole taiko set, which is an insane gift, right? So if we were to buy the middle-sized drums in any group are called chūdaiko, which means middle drum.
Okay.
Ours, and most of them are byōdaiko, which means tacks. So you see they have tacks, kind of like Chinese style. Mm-hmm. They're from way back in the day. They're from Chinese style drums.
Okay.
And those byōdaiko you're going to see tonight, new would cost like probably $3,500 each.
For the whole set? Or each?
Each.
Oh, wow.
Right?
You said there's like eight in the set, you said.
There's four in that set.
Four
we
in
have
that
four
one.
Other ones from Miyamoto, which is one of the top two taiko producers in the world.
Yeah.
We got an insane deal. We got those at half off. But if we were to buy those new, they'd be about $7,000 each.
A piece.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Right? So people sometimes say, hey, how many taiko do you have? I have zero. I don't have any taiko. The group has all the taiko.
That's quite the investment if you were to have one.
Yeah. I mean, there's a taiko conference every other year, and the last few times I go there, and I'm like, I'm going to buy a Tyco this time. And then I see the prices. I'm like, I'm not going to buy a Tyco this time.
Dude, I can only imagine, like, let's just say, like, the money wasn't really a big deal. What kind of obsession, like, what kind of rabbit hole could that possibly open up? Like, I'm a little bit of a gearhead when it comes to different things. Mm-hmm. So whether it's, like, I don't like photography equipment or something, it's like, I want all the equipment. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, oh, yeah, totally.
I can only imagine it's like, well, you got one drum, now you got to get two. And it's like, I want the whole set now. It's like, yep. you talk about the middle drums, and then I imagine what there's, like, a high end and, like, a low end, right?
Yeah, you can do that. I mean, the high end, the ones that I'm talking about, and my wife just texted me.
You're fine.
Sorry about that.
Wait, dude, when the boss calls.
Yeah.
The boss calls. It's all good. But yeah, dude, I'll wait for you to I was going to, like, try to fill in there, but I don't want to mess up your thought.
No. She's trying to come to the festival, so I'm telling her I can't meet her right now. Kind of sucks, but what was I talking about?
The Tyco drums.
The Tyco, oh, right. So, Tyco drums, the kind that we have, I was telling you, would be 7,000 new. Those are traditional drums.
Yeah.
Miyamoto and Asano, the two big makers, they usually only make traditional drums. They're single piece of wood. So, when you see them this big around,
it's
from a tree.
That big
that
around.
That big around. And if you go to, like, a Kodo concert, and they have the big, like, 6-7 foot old Tyco, that's a single tree, right?
Whoa.
And those drums cost almost as much as my house.
Yeah.
Like, those drums are ridiculously expensive. They have to, like, delve into undiscovered parts of Africa to even find a tree that big anywhere in the world.
So, right? They take out the tree and they, like, hollow it?
They hollow it and they make smaller and smaller drums out of each layer, right? They don't just,
like,
bore out the inside into sawdust, right? They they use it. But, yeah, each one is going to be a new drum. But those big ones, man, like, we're talking more than $150,000.
Whoa.
For those things.
I mean, that's a hell of a process to make that.
Well, right. And you can look online, look up Asano, A-S-A-N-O, Tyco making or something. There's a video on YouTube about, like, the different patterns they carve inside the drum to make sure it resonates exactly right.
Yeah.
And sometimes they string, like, a super tight piano wire inside to make it ring even more. And they have all sorts of secrets. They've been doing it 400 years.
Yeah. Right. Is it like the main manufacturer for these?
There's two main manufacturers of traditional drums. There's Miyamoto and there's Asano. Miyamoto is based in Tokyo. Asano is based, I can't remember, it's a small town, but they both now have presences in the U.S.
Okay.
So you can get them here, but they're really expensive. In 1969, I want to say, in 1968, the first Tyco group in this country was formed in San Francisco Tyco Dojo.
Okay.
In 1969, again, unrelated, there was a Buddhist group south of L.A. who was missing Tyco, because Buddhists in Japan sometimes use Tyco in their ceremony, and again, it's very repetitive, ritualistic. But they wanted a Tyco, and they called Japan, and Japan told them the price, and they're like, no. So they actually got a barrel. They found a barrel, and they got some rawhide, and they stretched the rawhide, and the way they did it, they didn't have a clue what they were doing, so they, like, literally, like, grabbed it with wrenches and, like, put it with their feet and, like, pull it. It's like, nail it now, right? And so they made, like, probably the world's worst Tyco.
Yeah.
But what they did is they proved that you could make Tyco out of a barrel. I mean, it seems pretty obvious now. It's a barrel-shaped thing, but no one ever did it because Tyco was always made out of a single piece of wood. That's how you made a Tyco.
Yeah.
And, like you were saying, in Japan, tradition is very very traditional, right? It's very sacred. You don't do something not traditional, but these guys wanted a Tyco, and so they did that.
And out metal.
Yeah, and they, not metal, it was a wooden
barrel.
Oh,
wooden barrel?
Wooden
okay.
barrel.
Okay.
Right? But it was a barrel. It wasn't a single piece of wood.
Right.
So they did that, and that started a sort of a new thought process that, hey, you don't have to have a single piece of wood Tyco. You can make it cheaper.
Yeah.
Right. Which is one of the main things that allowed Tyco to become so popular today. Because if you needed, you know, $30,000 of seed money to start a Tyco group, there would not be.
Yeah, there'd be.
There's over 1,000 in the U.S.
Yeah, right the barrier to entry would be so high.
Right.
Now, does that create a different sound with it being, you know, multiple?
It's different. It's different, but, I mean, the technology has improved. I wasn't there, obviously, in 69 when they were doing that, but there are whole techniques these days of how to turn a barrel into a Tyco. You know, you strip off the metal rings, right, and you open it up like a flower, and then you glue it, then you close it back up again so you don't need those metal rings that bind it together.
Okay.
Right? You sand it in a certain way, and you hold it together in a certain way, and you do the rim in a certain way and stuff like that.
Yeah.
People can do it on their own.
There's a process.
Yeah. So you don't even have to buy Tyco now. You can really make
just
it on
make
your
it.
Own.
Especially YouTube, man. There's so much information
right.
out there.
Yeah. Stanford Tyco has a good set of videos and instructions out there.
Yeah. So now I was reading, you've studied under like the best in the, like in the space.
I wouldn't say studied. I mean, I've learned from them.
Okay.
Right. I haven't spent years and years having them as my sensei. Right. But through various workshops and sort of adventures, I have worked with Osua Daiko, and you know, I've taken lessons from some of the best in this country, Yuta Kato and Tiffany Tamaribuchi and Chris Bergstrom and Shoji Kameda and all these like awesome people. Just trying to learn as much as possible, but I've never been like an apprentice to any of these folks
okay.
or anything like
so
that.
So have you had like a full-time apprentice or like apprenticeship before with any sort of like regular teacher?
No, not really. The guy that I started with, his name is Joe Kimura. So in 86, when Oguchi Sensei started the group, he basically started it with a bunch of kids, and he hung out for a week and then he left, right? And the kids managed to, well, really the kids' parents managed to continue on with the group until all the kids who were kind of the same age all went to college in 92. And then the group just wasn't, right? Because no one was here.
Yeah.
In 96, Joe Kimura came back from Stanford, and he was actually one of the founding members of Stanford Tyco, I believe. He was certainly in a very early generation of Stanford Tyco. And he, Stanford Tyco, by the way, used to be like the only Tyco group that was like a 4-credit class in a university.
Oh,
Stanford
really?
Tyco is a pretty high level Tyco group for a college group, and really often they're good for any group. Like
pretty
they're amazing.
Just in general.
Yeah, they're worth looking up. But he came back to Wash U for med school in 96, and so he restarted the group. He didn't have anyone to start it with, so he like grabbed a bunch of random people. he was at Wash U, so he found some Wash U people, he found some med students, he found some Japanese students, some of whom were architects, so they were like architecture students, architecture and medical Tyco.
Yeah.
Right? And he ran the group while he was in med school.
Wow, he was busy as hell.
Right, so he, our practice times were bizarre. It was like 10 on Sundays and then 10 p.m. on Wednesdays is when we would practice.
Oh.
Because that's when he could do it.
Yeah, what were you studying during this time?
I was in computer science program. There.
Okay, that's an right. intensive program as well.
Yeah, not as intensive as real engineering, if you ask me, right? You do other things where you have, like, bridges that might actually fall over. Like, that's a lot more serious than what
yeah,
I was
there's
doing.
There's some pressure there.
Right.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Computers, it doesn't work, you just fix it, right? Bridge doesn't work, you bury a lot of people.
That's true, dude.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
So now, have you gone to Japan and kind of, like, checked out the scene and studied there? Or
yeah, I've been personally to Japan 4 times. The second time I actually got to meet Oguchi Sensei himself before he died. He died in 2008. I met him in 2000. I got to spend a whole day and a half with him. It was cool. He was a character, man. He was just nonstop, just Tyco this, Tyco that. He had a whole museum in his dojo of all the things he'd done.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he was a really super interesting guy. And fortunately, somehow, I don't know why, his Japanese was like really easy to understand.
Do you speak Japanese?
Badly. Badly. At 2000 is probably the time I spoke at the best, cuz I just graduated college and I studied it for 3 years, and There's some people I just did not understand what they're saying.
Really?
But Obuchi Sensei, for some reason, I don't know why, maybe because he met so many people from around the world, but he was like really clear, really easy to understand. So that was nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the first time I went to Japan, and then as a Taiko group, we've been to Japan twice.
Okay.
So in 2009, we went to meet Osuo Daiko again. When I went in 2000, I was just on my own. 2009 was the first time we sort of tried to reconnect with Osuo Daiko, and we were supposed to meet Oguchi Sensei, but he died just a year before.
Mm-hmm.
At 84, he died in a car accident.
Oh, that's
things.
A bummer.
Yeah. But well, not really a car accident. He was hit by a car. So, because in Japan, you know, 84 is really young to be dying.
I look at 84 as young anywhere.
Well, that's true.
It's more common that people die around here that young. But
yeah, right. But we met them in 2009. We learned a new song. And 5 years later, in 2014, we went back. And between that time, I think it was 2011, we brought Osuo Daiko to St. Louis and did a show.
That's cool.
We're kind of talking to them about maybe bringing them back next year, maybe for the Japanese festival, but that's not at all decided yet. We're just talking.
How big is that group?
That's hard to say. So Osuo Daiko, I think their core membership is only like 5 or 6 people.
Okay.
But because they're in Japan and they're in Suwa, there's all sorts of taiko groups out there, and there's other... I can't remember the Japanese word for it, but there's like an extended family of taiko groups in Nagano prefecture, where Suwa is, that all are sort of offshoots of Osuo Daiko and play Osuo Daiko stuff. So if they want to, they can get, you know, 300 people together
if they really,
for a show.
Yeah, I feel like it feels like this big ceremony or festival or something.
Yeah,
they want to really show out.
In fact, we went to the Okaya Taiko Festival while we were in Japan both times, and that there's a whole show with pyrotechnics, and there's 300 people playing taiko at the same time.
Wow.
And it gets up to be like 500 when people come on with like mobile drums and stuff. And
yeah, that's probably crazy loud.
It is crazy loud, and it's crazy hard because you have people, you know, on one side of the stage, and the other side of the stage, the speed of sound makes it so that you can't hear each other. So there's a guy behind the audience way in the back with these gigantic gold drumsticks, and he's like doing the beats with his hands, and so everyone can see him and play with him at the same time.
So you have to like use your visual cues to keep up.
Yeah, even on a stage the size of the Koen here, you know, if you're on an opposite side of the stage, you still have to do that.
Yeah, it's just that vibration's hitting you? And
not the vibe. It's the speed of sound,
okay.
And it's the fact that a lot of the times we don't, our group anyway, we don't use mics or anything. We hardly ever use monitor speakers. So we can't really get that kind of feedback that, you know, like if a band on stage playing guitar and drums or whatever, you know, they have the monitors, they have headsets or earpieces or whatever.
Yep.
We don't have it. So it's kind of amazing.
Flying blind.
Yeah, sometimes even like you're playing one drum and there's a drum next to you and you think you're like super loud, and later the audience will say, you know, we couldn't really hear you. Right? And the other drum maybe sounds like it's overpowering everything, or maybe you can't even hear like the backbeat.
Yeah.
Right? The audience hears it fine, but just because of the shape of the stage and the way the sound works, you can't. So you have to use a lot of visual.
Yeah.
I think if you're not going to screw up.
Yeah, I can understand that. Totally different realm, but it's like just my whole life, like in athletics, like when you're in the middle of competition or anything, when you're on the outside, it's easy to see all these different things. But when you're in the thick of it, sometimes you just don't catch all the little things.
Mm-hmm.
It's like impossible.
Right. Yeah.
So have you lived in Japan at any, like for any length of time? It just seems like a place like you would live.
In 2000, I was there for 3 months.
Oh.
That's the longest.
That's legit though. That's a good amount of time.
It was a great experience.
Oh man, we're just.
If I hadn't been engaged, I probably would have tried to work there.
Try to work there,
yeah.
Become like a full-on expat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. There's just so many different nuances to that culture, dude. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's not. It's hard to get, I guess, on the inside. Right,
yeah.
In the culture, everyone's super nice to you, but it's always a very superficial nice.
Yeah, like you're still an outsider.
Until you can get really like make those relationships, and it's hard to do.
Probably takes quite a bit of time.
Yep.
Yeah, dude. So what are you wearing right now? What's that called?
This is a jinbei.
A jinbei.
Jinbei.
Okay.
What is it?
Is that
it's just a summer outfit people wear in Japan. It's really light. You know, the sleeves are tied on like loose threads, and so it's got a lot of ventilation.
Cool. It's super cool.
Well, that's the point of it. It's super cool, right?
In the very literal sense.
Right, yeah. So you see sometimes in Japan people will wear these, especially if they're at festivals and they're outside a lot.
Yeah.
Right? There's no, I guess, deep meaning to it. It's just like a really comfortable thing to wear.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have no idea what it was called, though. I've seen quite a few people wearing like that type of clothing, or there's a few different things like I've seen, like some more like longer ones.
Yeah, the longer ones, yukata, which is like a summer robe.
Yeah.
Also pretty common. It's slightly more formal than this. This is just like, hey, let's go hang out outside
or
whatever. Yeah,
let's go out and do something.
Yukata, you might wear a really nice yukata to a festival,
right,
if you want to look nice, or to Bonodori. There's a Bonodori tonight. You see people wearing their yukata.
Okay.
And then, of course, there's some people wearing, like, anime cosplay stuff.
Yeah, I've seen quite a bit of that.
So very little of that is traditional at all.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Not traditional. I'm just like, are these people just looking for an excuse just to dress up?
Yeah, well,
probably.
I mean, that used to be the case. People would just come and just wear, like, stuff. But it became a thing. It's like an event now. There's the cosplay event. I don't know what the event is. You know, it's ironic. In the last 20 years, 21 years, I haven't really seen the Japanese festival. Because I've been in it.
You're just in it,
right? And I got to be at this place at this time. And right now, Saturday, like, between opening ceremony and Bonodori is like the only time I have that's downtime to like see stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't really know all the stuff that goes on. There's a ton of stuff. Speaking of ton of stuff, I really want to see the sumo this year.
Yeah, we were talking about that on the call, dude. Yeah. I want to check them out too.
Yeah, they're the guys who came to Springfield, I think. At least one of them, Yama, I remember him, the huge guy. And they just had it was a great show.
Those guys are crazy athletes, dude. Like,
oh yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about like that monk life? Like, they do that the same shit.
Oh
I
yeah.
Mean, all they do is just eat and get massages and push each other around.
Yeah. And their stretching routine is insane. You know.
Yeah.
You have your legs all the way out, and there's a 600-pound guy sitting on your back. You know.
You get
flexible real fast.
Forcing you to open up that groin, dude. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. But that'd be some cool shit to see. It's really hard once you start doing something and you're really in the mix of things. Mm-hmm. At least I found that it's hard to become like a consumer, like once you're a producer, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No. That's true too. I don't know. I would like to see the festival, you know, but it is true. And even in the sense of taiko, you know, when I see a taiko show, it's like, oh well, I wonder if they choreographed that differently, if that would have been better, or like, I wonder how they get the costume to stay on, or something like that. It's not like, wow, that was amazing.
It's hard.
I mean, sometimes it was like, wow, that's amazing, but usually it's, you know, it's like, could we do that better? Or, wow, they're really better than us. Or, wow, we're really better than them. Or something like that. You know?
It's hard to just enjoy it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you're always looking for the details.
Yeah, man. Well, that's how you get good, dude. I mean, you're obviously very dedicated to the whole lifestyle, right? I mean, we were talking about, like, the marathon training on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you're putting in the work. And so you're the director of the group?
I'm artistic director of the performance team. I'm also primary instructor for the class because I'm the one who does it. It doesn't have to be that way.
assume that role by
president
default.
Of the organization, also from a legal standpoint. So, yeah, I do a lot of stuff.
Okay. Because I was looking online, and I was, like, trying to, like, find some information. Mm-hmm. You're a hard guy to research, dude.
Sorry. I guess that's not a good thing.
No, for some reason, I don't know if it's just because Facebook's weird. Sometimes you just couldn't find you on Facebook. And then, like, I read your bio and stuff, like, on the website and whatnot. But, so that's interesting to know. So, I mean, you hold several, like, roles within, like, you're keeping it going, dude. You're keeping the spirit.
I'm trying not to, though. I'm trying to make sure the group is self-sufficient.
You know,
at this taiko conferences I was telling you about, we've had many conversations with groups or not groups who there's one person who's, like, driving it, and, like, that person was the it was her vision, and she was wanting to make this tiger group, and she did everything, and then she quit, or she moved out of town, and then the group is screwed.
Yeah.
Right? So our group is – I'm constantly impressed with our group, how competent everyone is, not just at Taiko, but at things. Like, I don't even know all the things that go on for us to put on this Japanese festival. I don't have to, because
right.
we have so many people who are running it, and they've done it, and they know it. We have three different people who are managing the business, meaning like getting bookings, and many people can write sets, you know, decide which songs to play and who's on which piece. Even things like getting insurance and taking care of our van and the lease and everything. So if I were eaten by a shark tomorrow, the group would go on. I would be unhappy about it. But
right. But that's the idea, right? Whether it's like a business or an organization or just any sort of group, like you want it to become its own thing.
Right.
So that way it's not dependent on you. Right? So that way, if you step aside or
sure.
something ever happens, like,
it's
man,
not,
it's still growing. It's still evolving.
Not only relevant for Taiko, but, I mean, that's one of the things that I try to do. Anytime I do something, I try to not become the single point of failure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good move.
Mm-hmm.
That probably comes just from your years of just, like, computer work.
Well, that's also true. Yeah, the single points of failure are a very bad thing in a computer system also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dang, dude. So what's next? I mean, I know you got the Springfield Japanese mm-hmm. Festival coming up, and you're on this stretch of 13, 14 days.
Yep.
Like, where else can people like check out the group, or like, do you guys do pop ups throughout the city throughout the year?
We do about 30 shows per year.
Okay.
Right, and some of those are private events that you can't go to, but even if they're a private event, we'll at least mention that we're doing it on our website at STLTaiko.com, or if you just Google Japanese drumming in St. Louis, pretty much it. So
yeah,
you're gonna find us as the first thing. But yeah, I mean, we got the Sub 5 thing coming up, right? The grappling tournament that it was pretty exciting. We got like 5 of those coming up.
That's
next gonna
year. Be cool. Yeah, I'm in that. So that's
yeah.
gonna be. That's gonna
all
be
right.
Cool.
Well,
yeah.
Obviously, I'm rooting for your team.
Good.
Yeah.
We need
we'll play extra loud when you come out.
That'd be dope.
So we got that. I mean, we're pretty excited about that. And we're trying to put on a performance for February or March, just sponsor our own show next year. Hasn't really gotten very far. We're trying to make it like a world percussion extravaganza, but it's been slow going, probably because we're in festival season. We all got other things to do, you know.
Yeah.
But hopefully we'll do that. At least once a year we've been playing at the Focal Point, which is really interesting because it's a tiny venue. So you will not – there's not a bad seat in there.
Yeah,
up. We've been handing out earplugs at the door. Because
where's that at?
That's in Maplewood.
Okay.
Is it Maplewood? Yes, Maplewood. Like Sutton in Manchester.
Okay. Right, yeah, yeah. Do you guys play the Festival of Nations?
You know, we get that question all the time. We don't. The Festival of Nations.
I think it's already passed, but
It's always the weekend before Labor Day.
Yeah.
Which would make it tough if they did ask us, because you know we spend over a month preparing for this thing.
Yeah.
You know, this thing we do. Some things we don't often do. Like today we have a drum kit, for example, and we have costume changes, maybe new pieces, dances, that kind of thing that we can't always do in a regular show. So if something happens the weekend before, it's tough. But I don't know if your mics are picking up this group in the background, but
we'll definitely hear it.
This is the ASA group, the Okinawan drumming group.
Okay.
And they've been playing at the Festival of Nations.
And
they're fun to watch. It's very different from what we do, but it's very cool, and they're very coordinated. You know, I think it's impressive how like together they are.
Yeah, I mean, are they? Because if I recall right, I can't really see, but they had like quite a few people with them. It looked as if like they were kind of sectioning off the area for like choreography or different things kind of go along with the instruments.
Yeah, and it's sort of. I thought they were going to be at the Cohen Amphitheater, honestly. So I'm surprised they're here, but. Yeah, they all have mobile instruments.
Oh.
So they all walk and dance with their drums. Even the byodaiko, the tack drums, they have very light, almost Chinese versions of them. And so they can spin around and hit them with one hand and carry them with the other.
Do you guys ever partner with like any other groups to like that do like dancing or anything like?
Oh, we love collaborations when we can do it. We wrote a piece. Specifically for collaborating with African Lolo,
one
of the African drumming group, So we wrote that one, and we had their drummers and dancers come in and just join us. It was awesome.
I bet that would be super interesting.
Yeah,
to see.
And we've collaborated with like the Youth Circus at the City Museum.
Oh, okay.
Where we were playing for them, and then we switched places and we taught them like a little taiko piece, and then we were doing circus tricks.
That's cool.
Yeah, we weren't very good at it. Well, some of us were better than others, but I did the double cartwheel, which is like my best circus trick ever.
Double cartwheel?
Yeah, it's like you flip, you grab the other guy's waist, and so it's just like foot over foot over foot. It's like two of you together.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. Watch the video later. It was not fantastic, but it felt fantastic at the time.
Dude,
we collaborated with choral groups. We collaborated with a 75-person choral group in Colombia.
What's that?
Like a singing group.
Oh,
like
okay.
A choral. I don't know how to pronounce it. But what kind of stuff? Kind of like a choir.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But they had a piece written for them for like piano and flute and taiko and 75 voices. So they don't have a taiko in Columbia, Missouri, so they called us and we went down and played it. After practicing a lot.
Yeah. Do you guys ever get like invited down to like Branson and do shows down there?
No, you know, Shoji Tabuchi. That's him, right? The guy in Branson. He's that Japanese guy, fiddle player.
I didn't know there was a guy in Branson.
Yeah. He's a fiddle player. He's a Japanese fiddle player.
Oh,
he's
shit.
From Osaka, I think. He's actually, if you like classic country music, and probably even if you don't, like he is a fantastic fiddle player.
But oh, wow.
Because he's Japanese, he has a taiko show that he makes part of his act, like the opening of part two. I actually saw his show once.
Okay.
The opening of part two, this taiko group, it's not really a taiko group, it's like a bunch of country music dance extras that go like for a 1 week per year, they go and they study taiko, and then they put on this show. And that's one of those shows where you're watching them and like, yeah, we could totally do better than that. Right?
Make you cringe a little bit. It's
especially
like,
because he's got one of those $150,000 odaiko. It's just a beautiful freaking drum, and you have these like country music extras playing on it, and I'm like, damn.
So you can't even respect the instrument.
It's hard. It's hard. I mean, they're playing respectfully, but man, they're just like, oh, get someone else to do that, man.
Yeah, do it justice.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely impresses the Branson crowd, though.
Yeah, yeah. So now you, I want to be respectful of your time. You say you're writing a lot of these pieces yourself for your group, right?
Like, I've written about 6 or 7, I can't remember, but the group, other members of the group write pieces too.
Okay, so like it's kind of like an open collaborative, like creative environment.
Right. I call myself artistic director because a lot of taiko groups have artistic director, but I don't really direct things. I mean, maybe a tiebreaker sometimes, but really, you know, whatever the group wants to do is usually a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to say, no, we're not going to do that. So I have a piece we're playing today called Sumo in St. Louis, which I wrote after the first sumo group came to St. Louis at the Japanese festival. They wanted us to play like this sumo opening on taiko, and they gave us this recording, and it was just mind-blowing. Like, I couldn't figure out, like, is there even a time signature? Like, what is this?
It's chaos.
So, not really chaos, because it made sense, but you couldn't tell why it made sense.
Oh.
Right? Because it's like, yeah, okay, I'm into it. I don't know why I'm into it. I don't know what I'm listening to, but it's great. Kind of like like the persistence of memory, you know, that Dali painting with the clocks melting. You're like, I don't have a clue what this means, but man, it's really cool. So I took that sort of arrhythmicness and sort of interpreted it, and then I wrote the intro, and the rest of it I actually stole from the rhythm anyway from a Polish folk song.
Ah,
right. And then the middle of it has just this random thing that just happened to be like going around in my head for years, and I'm like, I gotta put this in a song now.
Just has to come out.
Yeah. And so after that, tonight we've got a piece by Joel, who's another member of our group, called Three Rabbits, which is like a super fun piece. And then we're finishing with a piece called Omiyage, which is by Shoji Kameda, who is not in our group, but he's one of the premier like taiko players in this country. He's an amazing guy. He's also a super nice guy. And he wrote this piece sort of as a what's the word? Sort of like as a break in the tradition of people saying, this is our song, you can't play this.
Yeah.
So he has this song called Omiyage, which means gift or souvenir. And he's like, here's my gift to everybody. Anyone can play this. Anyone can do whatever you want with it. It's your song.
Oh, that's dope.
Go for it. So, yeah, and the only, like, traditional thing we're playing today, I think, is probably Kagura Daiko, which is a song from Osuwa Daiko. And Taiko Boom, going back to Taiko Boom, that book would call it a modern traditional piece because Oguchi-sensei did write it. Here's a guy that was alive at the same time I was alive, so it doesn't go back thousands of years. But as far as Kumi Daiko, which is ensemble drumming, mm-hmm. it's one of the most traditional you can get, right, because it's from Osuwa Daiko. And it's the story of the first Taiko.
Okay.
The sun goddess Amaterasu got pissed one day because her brother was, like, destroying her fields and stuff. Brother-in-law? I don't know. Some other god. And so she went and she hid in a cave, which, you know, if the sun goddess goes, if the sun hides in a cave, the whole world is kind of not in such great shape.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. I didn't know if you wanted me to say fucked, but yeah, that's the word that came to mind.
Yeah, that's it.
The gods all got together and tried to get her out of the cave, but no one could roll the boulder away until, I can never remember the name of the goddess, but there was a goddess who overturned a tub or a sake barrel. I've heard different versions.
Okay.
And started, like, dancing on it and doing a striptease. And the sound of that was so interesting that Amaterasu, like, rolled the stone in front of the cave away just a bit to see. And then the gods pulled it away so she couldn't go back in. But that dancing on the tub was the first sound of the first taiko.
Okay.
So that's what that piece is about. And that's, I think, the third piece we're playing today.
We're all saved because of it.
Yeah, I know. Anytime you get a sunburn, you can blame those people.
Sons of bitches. So now with you, like, composing music and people in, like, America composing, like, original taiko pieces, mm-hmm. is that frowned upon at all by, like, more traditionalists or, like, maybe, like, people in Japan? Do they look at that and be like, that's not taiko? Like, that's bullshit.
Some of them do, actually. Some of our original pieces, Furuya-sensei from Osuwa Daiko, literally I heard him say, that's not taiko.
Oh,
you know?
Gosh.
But, I mean, it depends on what you look at it, right? Everyone's opinion of anything is different.
Yeah.
You know, what is art?
Yeah.
Does Jackson Pollock create art? Well, his bullshit sells for more money than I'll make in my whole life, but I still think it's garbage, right?
Yeah.
Me personally.
It's all opinion.
It's not
right?
art. You just fling paint on a canvas. Screw you, Jackson Pollock. But it is really a matter of opinion. I mean, do you like what you're doing? Do you have to define it? Do you have to say, is this taiko? You know, you can wax philosophical all day long, and at the taiko conference, people love that. Oh, is it taiko if you're not Japanese or if you're a fourth generation Japanese or blood? Like,
or you're from fucking Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yeah, right.
Bro.
You know, who cares, right? Just do you like what you're doing and do people enjoy what you're doing? That's really what matters.
That really is what matters. So many people want to get dogmatic about things and it prevents growth.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's what it's all about.
It's part of being human. You want to put things in a box.
Yeah.
You know, at work we deal with genetics and, you know, you have like the taxonomy of a plane of kingdom and phylum and genus.
Yep.
People try so hard to fit it in, but it doesn't fit in, right? Because nature doesn't work that way. So you have these things that don't really go in the tree, right?
Yeah.
And it makes it miserable when the tree is in digital form because you have to figure out how to code for this thing, which has a structure, but the structure isn't real.
Yeah, that's true, man. I mean, we like structures as humans, but nature doesn't fall into that.
It doesn't.
It really doesn't. So is that, I mean, at work, is that an interesting conversation when people start asking you, like, so what do you do, like, when you're outside of here? You're like, well.
I'm trying to get everyone from work, hopefully, to come to see the performance here.
Yeah.
But, in addition to this, to taiko, the last 10 years or so, I've been doing Argentine tango.
Oh,
also.
That's
so
dope.
This isn't like my only
It's
thing
not your
now.
Only thing.
It's my main thing, for sure, that doesn't earn me any money.
Yeah, but you're doing the tango dance. Mm,
right.
That's such a beautiful dance.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. We need more people, so feel free to show up.
Show up.
Especially men, we need leads. you know?
Do I have to know how to do it? You guys are going to teach me.
No, you have to learn how to do it. You can't just show up, but you can take lessons. There's free lessons, too.
Free lessons. That's all I need. Yeah. Dope, dude. Well, look, dude, I want to be respectful of your time. This has been fantastic. I really appreciate you, sitting down with me during this busy time.
I appreciate your taking the time, too, to come and talk to me. Hopefully it's worth listening to.
Dude, this has been a rad conversation. So I'm going to turn the floor to you. So I know we've kind of mentioned it throughout, but just tell the folks how they can get a hold of, check out the group,
The
performances, socials, all that good stuff.
Yeah, St. Louis Osuwataikō, St. Louis, Osuwataikō, at STLTAIKO.com. We are St. Louis's best Japanese drumming group. You can Google us, we're there. We are at the Japanese Festival every Labor Day weekend, including this weekend. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we got shows. The Botanical Gardens website has that. We do 30 performances per year, roughly, some years more, some years less. It's all available on our website. We have a newsletter, which is really professionally done. You can sign up for the newsletter, learn about it, learn how to take classes. We do classes all year round. It's the traditional or not traditional art of Japanese drumming. That's what we do right here in St.
Yeah,
Louis.
Yeah, dope. Love it. Hey, Andrew, thanks again, brother. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries.
All right, man. All right, everybody, till next time.
Hey, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you did get value out of that podcast, do me a solid. Go tell a friend. That's it. Just go tell one friend. Help us grow this thing. If you could, also leave a rating and a review. And head over to YouTube and subscribe if you're not subscribed on YouTube. You know, we're really growing that experience. And you guys are going to get a lot of value over there as well. So go check us out. Subscribe, share, leave a 5-star rating review. That helps other folks find this podcast, which is what we want, right? We want people to grow or help us grow. And we want more and more listeners. So go do that. Also, just give your guys self a fucking pat on the back because you guys are fucking rad. And I love you guys. Big thank you to Convergence Media Group. We've partnered with them to improve our video experience, so you can see those direct results over at YouTube. But man, if you're interested in checking them out, man, they help grow your internet presence, and they help with content and strategy, and they're just a pretty rad group. They work with all industries, and they're based here in St. Louis. Go to Convergence MG. You can check them out, or just go and check them out on social at Convergence MG on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook or any of that good stuff. So, all right, guys, I love you. I will catch you next time. Mwah.